Welcome to the Jiu-Jitsu of Life, a weekly podcast for BJJ enthusiasts who are striving to succeed both on and off the mats. This podcast is brought to you by Rulebliss, makers of the world's finest custom jiu-jitsu apparel. And here are your hosts on the Jiu-Jitsu of Life, Carter Fisk and Mo Siddiqui.
Welcome to the Jiu-Jitsu of Life podcast. This is episode number 144, round three, interview with our favorite interviewee, Calum Callista.
Hey, yo, what's going on, brother Calum?
No, not much, man. It's always a pleasure. Thank you guys for having me back.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. We're always excited to have you, man. Because we know that you keep your ear to the jiu-jitsu street. Yes. You know all the gossip and the ins and out of what's going on.
Yeah. So I guess, first of all, we got to know, because Mo and I had a little side bet going from the last interview. Where are you these days?
States.
Still in Georgia?
Yeah, man. With that, the way, you know, my main job in the Dominican was with tourism, you know, too. Tourism has just went to a standstill. You know, they just, that new thing they announced about Americans having to have a negative test 3 days before coming back, you know, traveling internationally has just completely destroyed tourism.
Yeah.
You know, who wants to go through that? You know, do you want to, you know, you go on vacation and let's just say by chance you do test positive. Well, now you're stuck in a country for, say, 15, 20 days, you know?
Yeah.
Good part, Dominican, they're the only country in the world that's offering travel insurance for that. So if you were to catch COVID there, they cover 100% of your stay, 100% of medical costs, like everything.
Okay. But,
you know, to explain to your boss and stuff like that too, you know, hey, maybe you could find a doctor too to write it and say you did.
Yeah, there you go. I'm just quarantining. I want to come back to work.
Yeah.
Nice, man. Yeah. What? So we know that the last time that we talked with you, that you had just started a new academy in the States. That's been about 4 months since the last time we talked. Tell us what's going on with the new academy. You know, it's still not even post pandemic. I mean, we're still kind of in the thick of it.
Yeah.
It's really like, I can't even put into words how happy I am with this academy. You know, it's like things, I guess I just got a really good bunch of guys, you know, and the academy's really blown up. We actually just went and competed in a grappling industries yesterday down in Jacksonville, Florida. There were 4 months old. I've got I've got two blue belts. So everybody else is brand new. And out of 27 teams, we got fourth place.
Nice. Wow. That's awesome.
Super stoked. Like a lot of guys, it was their first competition and stuff. And we did really good. You know, it's a group of guys that are really hungry to learn.
Do you think that your academy, Calum, is going to be, you know, because Carter and I have had this discussion before that there's not a right or a wrong, right? But you kind of have to choose. You don't want to be the academy that does it all, right? Like, we're for the families and we're for the kids and we're also competition. Like, it's just not, usually those academies don't make it. But when you have an academy that just focuses on one thing, what would you say your academy's focused on right now?
You know, as a business standpoint, I wanted to make it like you just said, you know, right there, like focus on everything, you know, but I realized you can't accommodate everyone. You know what I mean? Like there's a couple other schools in the area. So we're mostly a competition school. You know what I mean? So like, if you want to compete, if you want your kids to compete, things like that, then that we're the right spot for you. But I'm not much of a self-defense academy. You know, a lot of my blue belts would probably lose a street fight, you know, cause they're going to butt shoot, trim bolo and stuff like that. But I just do what makes me happy. You know, I think maybe that sounds selfish in a little bit, but you know, I've had academies in the past that, like I say, it was just sometimes I'd be getting dressed to go to class and I'm thinking to myself, like, I just want to like tell somebody to do something and me go over in the corner and worry about myself. You know, it's just frustrating. So yeah, I think
that's important, brother, what you just said in terms of business. You know, doing what makes you happy.
Yeah.
I think it's very, I don't know, Carter, I'd like to get your take on it, but I think it's hard to be really successful at something if you're miserable doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, then I guess you could just say you're not successful, right? I mean, if you're miserable doing it, then you're not successful. And I think it also, you can tell, like, because I've trained in places where, like, you know, the instructor was like having to talk himself into like, okay, I'm either going to eat a bullet today or I'm going to go teach this crappy class. I don't know which is worse. And you can feel it. You know, there's the vibe of it versus, you know, when you're excited about teaching and ready for it, it percolates and it you know, the whole, it spreads out to everywhere. So having that excitement is great. And that's probably why you guys are doing so well so quickly, because they can tell, like, this guy is excited about doing this, and that spreads to everybody.
It's funny you say that. Like, I think to myself, I attended one time a Helson Gracie seminar, and if you've ever been to one of his seminars, like, he tells you to ask questions, but if you ask the question, it's the biggest mistake in the world, you know.
I'm taking it. You were the guy that asked the question.
Yes. Oh yeah. And I just got, at the time I was a blue belt, and I want to say it was one of the last questions I ever asked at a seminar. He just, like, you know, why you ask this question? It's so stupid. And then he just proceeded to just beat the crap out of me, showing me why that wouldn't work, you know? So I was like, okay, I got it.
That's good. That's good. So what do you do with this? Do you find that a lot of parents come in with their younger children and automatically, like, they want their kids to compete? Or is that something that you tell them, like, you emphasize that, like, we are a competition school and we'd really like to see your child compete?
No, you know, we usually just advertise it as kind of like, you know, building self-confidence and, you know, things like that for kids. But I kind of think, you know, my take on that is when they see that a lot of the people are competing and winning and stuff too, I think they want the same for their kid. We don't pressure it and try to, you know, put it on kids who don't want it. Cause I do, like, my kids program, which you got to understand is very new to me, you know, and in the Dominican, again, it was all competition and we never had a kids program. So me coming into this kids program, it was something brand new, but I really, like, I don't know how to describe it. It's like, I want kids to not feel pressured to compete. If they want to compete, great. But I really want to build in their mindset, I guess, the lifestyle that jiu-jitsu is.
Yeah, I used to teach kids a little bit too. And I find, like, you always have to make it sort of fun on their terms, because if you start kind of making it too hard or whatever, then it becomes a negative thing for them. But once they get excited about the idea of competing and doing things like that, it's sometimes hard to hold them back, because it's, you know, it's like you can steer that ship and then you've got to run to keep up with it. So that's cool, man. I was lucky because I didn't teach that many kids, and the parents didn't tend to watch very much, and the ones that did, the kids were already in other martial arts, because I was teaching out of a place, the guy was teaching Hapkido and Taekwondo and all that. So I didn't really have too many bad parent experiences. I had none. Like, they were always good. And then for a while we were teaching beginners. And so we had parents, like, forcing their kids into it. Like, my kid's playing video games all the time. We want him to defend himself. And, like, that was always just, I did that for like maybe 6 months. I'm like, I'm not teaching beginners anymore. I'm like, go pay your dues somewhere else and come back here, because I just can't. It was so frustrating. Because they would come for like a month and then they would quit. And it was just, it's not for me. I can't teach beginners. So
it's tough. It's rewarding in the sense, like I say, when we go compete and I see the progress.
Yeah.
So what is the, what do you foresee in the future for your academy? Like, 5 years from now, what would you like to see your academy have grown into? What does that look like? What does your academy look like 5 years from now?
We're getting to a point, I think pretty soon we're going to have to move out to our own facility, because we're expanding at like a rate that I didn't think we would expand so fast too. The only downfall I have here is I'm in Fort Stewart, which is a huge military town. And I get guys just long enough to make them really good, and then they ship out somewhere else. Okay. You know, that's really hard for me. Big influence there. But kids, like I say, is growing really big. I'd say, you know, I'd like to have the best competition team in Georgia right now. You know what I mean? That's kind of a thing I'd like to go for. I really want my guys competing. I want to still compete myself.
This is sort of the other part of the bet between Mo and I, because as soon as we talked last time, when we got off the phone with you, I'm like, he's not going back to the Dominican Republic. It's not happening. So now it's been 4 months. You're still not back. So far, I'm winning the bet. Although Mo didn't say that you were going back, so I guess maybe we're both thinking. But do tell. Now, it's weird too, because if my geography is correct, Puerto Rico is right next to the Dominican Republic, and a certain BJJ fanatic bestseller just moved to Puerto Rico. So I don't know. He might be following you.
I wonder how true that is. You know, I think about that. You know, like. I mean, he has to disappear from so much training. There's not much high-level training in Puerto Rico. You know, I understand he's pretty good, you know, but still he wants to be the best. So it's like, unless he just moves Dana here and all them guys out there.
He did. He moved his whole team there.
Wow.
Okay. He said, I actually go against people half my size and I dominate. So that's my
suggestion. Talking about me. He usually goes against me.
If you're 90 pounds or below, I'm whooping your ass. That's all I can say. So
that's what my kid was. That's what I say used to. He was the guy that I used for warm up and all that, you know. But man, when we were talking about this the other day, and I think it's a good thing that I've learned with jiu-jitsu, because I have two. Both of these sons are adopted sons.
Okay.
So my oldest son, who is 24 right now, was always like a phenom in jiu-jitsu. Yeah. So the minute he stepped on the mats, he was great. You know what I mean? At green belt, he was beating brown belts and stuff. Wow. You know what I mean? Okay. So that he never experienced losing. Always being good. Always great. Always on top. Well, as he got a little bit older and out of like being 12, 13 years old, kind of started to plateau. And then he was at a point that he thought he knew everything because he was always so good. He wouldn't listen. And couldn't deal with losing.
You know, there's a guy that I've told Mo about before that I don't even think he trains anymore, but I met him when I think I was a purple belt and he was a white belt, and he was already beating purple belts at white belt. He went against Rafa Mendez when they were brown belts, and this guy was still a purple belt, but he took his white belt and dyed it brown just to go compete in the brown belts. And I think Rafa beat him like 2-0 or something. It was like a close match. Uh-huh. And he was, as soon as there was adversity, he couldn't handle it. Yep. And he came back. He lived in California. He came back to Austin maybe like 7 years ago. And he was going against guys that he used to just annihilate. And now it's like, you know, we'd all been training. Guys were getting better. And he was, you know, having troubles or guys were beating him. And he split town, man. He just couldn't deal with it. And I don't think he trains anymore because it just, but he was so talented. But he just couldn't handle losing, couldn't handle being the best guy versus I know other guys, you know, myself included, Mo's being modest, Mo's full of crap, by the way, don't listen to him. But, you know, I know other guys that are, because it's like, then the worst thing that can happen to you has already happened. You get your ass kicked all the time. It's okay. So I go compete. I get my, who cares? There's no pressure versus if you're the top dog in the gym, everyone looks at you that way and you go out and you get whooped in competition. It makes you look, you know, if you base your whole ego on that, man, that's a hard thing to overcome. So, I think it almost helps to be.
Well, let me ask the both of you. This is a question from a coaching standpoint, right? Because I think coaches, a lot of times, they want to teach their athletes, their students, how to win, right? Like that would be one of the main goals, right? I mean, there's a lot of other things that go beyond that, like developing character outside, off the mat. But we want to teach them how to win. How do you teach them? I don't even know the right way to say it, but how to lose? How to be a good loser? Because I think that's an important lesson, right? Not just on the mat, but in life. People have to know that there's adversity, that you're going to lose, and how to deal with that. So how do you teach that from a coaching standpoint?
For me, you know, this maybe sounds weird, but I put a lot of emphasis on losing more than I do winning. You know, I was reading an article, like I kind of dived into a rabbit hole about this because I had this one parent, you know, that was really hard at a competition on his kid about winning. You know, the kid went out there and gave everything she had. I mean, literally just left all on the mats, And, you know, I heard him say to her, like, during the match, if you don't win this match, you know, you wait till we get home and see what's going to happen. And I just, like, you know, I thought to myself, like, because this girl loves the sport so much, you know? Yeah. And I thought to myself, like, you know, what's that doing? So, like, I just started, like, looking into things. And I seen a good thing where they were talking about Vince Lombardi. There was an older quote where he had said, winning's not everything. It's the only thing.
Yeah. Okay. Carter and I, we talk about stoicism a lot. And, you know, one of the things from the Stoics, right, is the obstacle is the way, right? And it's basically about, you know, choosing the harder path. And one of the things Marcus Aurelius said was that, you know, the only thing he would never pray for an easy life. He wanted the hardest life possible. Kind of like you're saying, right? Like, if there was a guy that could smash me, I'd be at his doorstep every day, because that is the harder route. And the obstacle becomes the way. That is the only way. There's a lot of wisdom in that, man, because you got to really, really be the type of person that's willing to move outside of your comfort zone.
Yeah. Yeah.
I take that like I think about my life in general. You know, my brother and I both raised by the same parents, and my brother ended up taking a path that he ended up in prison and drugs and all kinds of things. And me, like, you know, I took that same adversity that he had. We both had the same adversity growing up, dirt poor, things like that. My parents died by the time I was 14. So I took that adversity into, I'm not going to be a statistic. I'm not going to be what the society expects me to be. You know what I mean? And I, like, think to myself, I'm thankful all of those things happened to me in a way, because I couldn't deal with problems that I face now, you know, and adversity that I face now, if I didn't deal with that back then.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting too. Like, you know, the idea that not only did you sort of change locations mid pandemic in,
yeah,
probably, I don't want to say the easiest, what the most efficient way to give oneself COVID through jujitsu. I mean, I'm trying to think of a way to get COVID better than jujitsu. I think it's the best. Like, if somebody wants to get COVID and you're like, well, just go grapple that guy and you'll probably get it 99%. So it's like, you know, you're thriving during that. And I think part of that is that mentality of, I'm going to figure out how to make this work. And it's kind of, you know, Mo and I were talking about this recently. It's kind of the old school, when the Gracie challenge used to happen, they'd say, you know, no rules and no time limit. And they said the importance of no time limit is, like, if you drop somebody off in an island and you're like, okay, I'll be back in 2 hours, they're going to be fine. But if you go, see you later, we're not coming back.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to either die or you're going to learn how to survive. Those are the two things. So that's kind of the idea of if you have that sort of mentality coming into something, and COVID was such an interesting sociological study in the way that, you know, we've seen businesses that have really thrived and figured out how to make it work. And then we've seen other ones where they just kind of put their head in the sand and they're like, well, we're going to wait till it goes back to normal. And it's like, well, you have no control of that, and that may never happen. So what are you going to do? And it's been very interesting to see, like, it's kind of separated the men from the boys this year, or last year did, I think, a lot. So which is probably ultimately a good thing.
This is more of a this is a conversation Carter and I have been having. It's a deeper philosophical one, and I'm gonna frame it a little bit different, but and kind of put you on the spot here, Coach Kalem, because look, coaching is a very coaching is a serious job, you know, because you're a mentor to people. I mean, people that love jiu-jitsu, I mean, just think about how they look at their coaches, right? Like, some of them revere them at the highest regards.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a very, very big responsibility, because a lot of these children and a lot of these young adults, they're probably not even going to do what their parents say. They're going to do what you say, right? Like, that's how much influence you have over them. So one of the questions I asked Carter not too long ago, because he said he's one of my absolute best friends, and I want to know my friend very well. I asked him, you know, hey, Carter, what's your biggest fear in life? We're going to save that question for you for part four, interview part four. But okay, for today, from a coaching standpoint, what's your biggest fear? What's your biggest fear as a coach?
Hmm. You know, like you said, it's something I'm not used to as much with, like, with the kids, that, you know, a lot of times parents will come to me if their kid's misbehaving and things like that. You know, they want me to keep them in line, things like this, you know? So that's something that's different for me But I feel, I don't know how to describe it, like very more responsible, I guess, with the kids program. That my biggest fear, I think, would be to, I don't know, maybe not be that person that they put on that pedestal. You not be able to live up to that. You know, it's, it's a lot better, you know, but I want... It's been really difficult on me with the injuries, you know, tearing my pectoral muscle and not being able to compete as much, because I've always been the guy that everybody's like, you know, like, oh, man, look what Coach Kalem did. He did this. You know, did you see him in that match?
If your students can see how you handle an injury, that is a great lesson, because, man, I've seen so many people that they get injured at every belt level. I've seen black belts that get injured and never come back. Yeah. And part of it's ego, part of it's that ability to deal with that particular type of adversity. I think that's actually a great lesson for your students to see, because,
100%.
You know, understanding, again, and we're going back to the Stoic lessons over and over again, of focus on what you can control. It's like, man, when the pec is torn, you can't chi it back. You can't rub it back or do Mr. Miyagi back. But what can you do? You know, what can you work on still to improve? And when students see that, it's like, to me, that is a great lesson for them to see. So as much as you might not have been able to get there and compete, them seeing you handle an injury in a sort of responsible, mature way and a, you know, productive way is a great lesson for them to see. Because, man, I can't tell you how many people I've seen where it's like, they literally never come back, because now they're like, oh, I'm going to lose to blue belts or whatever it might be. And it's like, man, who cares? Like, it's so much of a better, because everyone's going to get injured. I mean, in most cases, it's me injuring him like a dick. And he gave me a gi and I still injured him. I'm like the worst friend on the planet.
He didn't believe.
So bad. And he didn't even tell me, he wrote an article about it. And I was reading it. I'm like, oh, it's a good article. I'm like, well, that sounds familiar. Oh, wait a minute, that was me. That was me that hurt him. So everyone gets injured. So to me, it's like how you handle it is a really important lesson. So I think that you're a good example.
You know what I love about that story so much is because we, at one point during this podcast, we were talking about how do you teach your students to lose? And I don't think there's a better way, or I don't know if there may be a better way, but one of the best ways is like, by teaching them by example, right? And so what better way to see their coach go through adversity, see their coach have to tap. Now they're going to learn, okay, how am I supposed to react when I lose? Well, let's look at coach. What did he do? And coach got up off the mat. He started training again. He kept a positive mindset. He stayed humble. He wasn't he didn't make excuses. These are all the lessons that, because here's the thing, right? Like eventually you're never going to stay the greatest. And no matter what it is, you can be the fastest runner in the world. Eventually you're going to lose. You can lift the most weight. Eventually someone's going to lift more, you know, all that type of thing. So it's about, I think what you started with, coach, is it's character development. It's who are they going to be once they leave the gym, because that's the only thing that they can carry with them really into their 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s and beyond that. Right. I think that would be such an important lesson for me to be able to see my coach and how he handled adversity. And if I admired him, well, then now I know what footsteps to follow, right? Like, I'm going to handle adversity the way he handled it because I've seen it firsthand. Not only that, it becomes this thing of like, a lot of times you don't want to listen to people because you're like, well, you've never been through it. You're just giving me some advice out of a textbook.
Yeah.
Right. But now it's like, well, no, I practice what I preach. I'm not just telling you this. I lived this, and this is why I'm telling you. It's true wisdom.
Yeah. It's like once I hit that 40 mark, and I was lucky always, but it's like once I hit that, now it's like, man, every other day it's something. I'll injure myself getting out of the shower.
I love it. When's the next Bex? When do you expect to be back in competition mode? Do you expect that to happen in 2021?
Yeah, for sure. I competed at the end of 2020 in Arte Suave Super Fight and ended up winning that tournament. So I felt good in that. And then I've got a Super Fight scheduled for March, I think mid-March, that it's another main event that I'm fighting for, are competing for a championship belt there. So that'll be good. It's with Southeast Grappling Association. It's a good friend of mine, Josh Manoa, is putting it on.
Nice.
I'm stoked for that. And then, like I say, hopefully, IBJJF and stuff kicks back up. If not, I mean, I've been fortunate living in Georgia because we're having tournaments every weekend between Georgia and Florida. And I think Texas about the only places that they're doing stuff.
Yeah.
And we're competing pretty much every weekend. But these little events like this, I never get any black belts to sign up, you know, so it's tough.
Yeah. Any final words of wisdom, either to your students or to people that know you or people that don't know you? But they're getting into jiu-jitsu. Any final words of wisdom?
Man, you hear me say this all the time that, you know, jiu-jitsu, it is a way of life. You know, you hear people talk about that. Like, when it grabs a hold of you and, you know, you guys can tell, you've been training long enough that you know when somebody's got the bug or somebody doesn't, you know, and you know when a guy's going to stick around, when he's not, you know, and I think that's a huge thing. If people can find jiu-jitsu, you know, I know what jiu-jitsu did for me in my personal life.
It's so good having you on the show, Caleb. This will not be, you are going to be a lifetime guest. We're always going to have you on. So we'll have to put something in the books for the next time we're going to have on, and we'll talk some more jiu-jitsu gossip. Also, I'd like to see, I'd like to see how you progress with the kids program. You know, because I think that's going to be an evolution for you because it's new. And I really think that you're going to thrive and prosper in that area because you got a lot to bring to the table, not just from jiu-jitsu, but before you even got into jiu-jitsu, there's a lot of things in your life that the adversity that you have in your life that you can really teach you these kids and get them to a better place. You know what I mean? That's inspiring, my brother. In the books, Brother Carter.
Yes.
Nice. To check out this episode again, or to check out our past episodes, go to the Jiu-Jitsu of Life. Also, check us out on Apple iTunes. Be sure to like, subscribe, leave us a nice review. To our show sponsor, Robles, makers of the world's finest custom jiu-jitsu apparel. Also, be sure to check out Sneaky Submissions with our man, Kalem Kalista. We're always going to be rooting for you, my brother. Also, check out Steve Hordensky, Jiu-Jitsu on the Go. It's a great online platform when you're needing some supplemental training at home during COVID or post-COVID even. It's a great platform. Check out Yellow Pine Investments. You know, at Robles, we make custom gis. Yellow Pine Investments makes custom warehouses. Check them out. And last but not least, Chaparral Moving. If you're in the Austin area, check out Chaparral Moving. Ask for Tony. Tell him Mo sent you. They got moving down to a science. I'm Mo, that's Carter, that's Caleb. And as always, we wish you guys nothing but the best, both on and off the mat. Thanks for listening, guys.
Thank you, guys.
That's it for this episode of the Jiu-Jitsu of Life. Your hosts are Carter Fisk and Mo Siddiqui. This podcast is brought to you by Robles, makers of the world's finest custom jiu-jitsu apparel. You can subscribe to the Robles newsletter to get the exclusive content at robles.com. You can find more episodes of this show on our website at thejiujitsuoflife.com. And you can subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts. Thank you for listening, and we wish you a great week, both on and off the mat.